racism is, by one definition, stereotypes of people groups that are institutionalized by those in power. Sometimes that institutionalization of stereotypes happens in government. Last month, two new groups were established with the purpose of reinforcing diversity, equity, and inclusion in government and other institutions. The Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion met for the first time last month, and another group, the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project, announced its existence that same week. We'll hear from members of both groups today as we explore DEI issues today on the West Side. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Joining me today is the producer of our counterpart program serving northwestern Wisconsin, Robin Washington of Simply Superior. Robin, good to have you along today.
Great to be here, Dean. And let's introduce our three guests from the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion. Odawa White is Dean of Student Affairs at La Corderie Ojibwe College in Hayward. Odawa, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you. Really glad to be here with you today.
Also joining us today is Mai Zhang. She is president of the organization Hmong American Leadership and Economic Development, and was elected last year to the Eau Claire City Council. Mai, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Robin and Dean. We're excited to be here.
Great. And the chair of the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Diversity is Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services, Dawn Krim. Secretary Krim, thanks for coming on the show.
Great. Thank you so much for having us.
And later on this hour, we'll be joined by one of the co-chairs of the new anti-racism group, the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project, Burl Middleton. For now, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by emailing ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Or you can call us at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615.
So getting into the questions here, Odawa White, you work with the La Corderie Ojibwe College in Hayward. Tell us about your background and how you came to be appointed to the council.
Okay, yep, that's La Corderie Ojibwe College, northern Wisconsin on the La Corderie Ojibwe Reservation. And how I became part of the council is I started out as a state employee, so I worked for University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire for 18 years. And then made sense, I grew up in La Corderie Ojibwe Reservation pretty much all my life. And it made sense that I made the transition to Dean of Student Affairs and also to help students gain access to their education and make sure that promise that we have with our community members and access to higher education is going to be met within our own community. And I became part of this because of some of the work that I've done, some of the trainings that I've done surrounding American Indian students and higher education in particular, and then some of my also presentations and as far as understanding of my culture and my heritage and my history. So that's part of just the background of how I became part of this. And I'm always amazed about these opportunities to be able to provide any sort of understanding around issues related to diversity, inclusion, and equity, because my background at UW-Eau Claire was I worked in multicultural affairs pretty much for a really long time. So.
And Mai Zhang, you run the organization called Hmong American Leadership and Economic Development. Talk about the focus of that organization and what you're hoping to add to the Governor's Council.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dean. I am excited to share that Hmong American Leadership and Economic Development, a not-for-profit, nonprofit grassroots organization that was founded by a group of young Hmong professional in 2019. Really, the organization was founded to strategically advocate for equitable access, equitable economic and social opportunities for the Hmong community and other underserved groups in rural Western Wisconsin. We are based out of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and we tend, the goal for Hailed and what we've been doing since our founding is really to build purposeful and meaningful relationships with partners and collaborators to really establish culturally competent pathways to addressing economic and social disparities. And really creating intentional community development in the way where we are so, there's so many things that issues that intersect with this intersectionality of issues that impacts a person's ability to grow wealth. And then it also impacts, we realize that here in Western Wisconsin, we can't divide, we can't start dividing groups by racial status. We're so limited with the number of minorities. So we do create, our goal is to really create this non-traditional platform to networking so we could really bridge the professionalism, the opportunities, and the networking to our communities, underserved communities. So we're hoping that that's something that we're able to bring to the council, really at this broad lens of being minority and in the rural, being in rural Wisconsin, where the disparities and the things that we face over here is dramatically different than if it is in an urban space.
Mm-hmm. Don Krim, the governor announced this advisory council last month. So what's the mission for the group and what are key issues that you hope to address?
Well, thank you again for having me. When you think about this council, the governor has been talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion since he was elected. And so for the past 2 years, he's been laying the groundwork for this next step, which would include those professionals all around the state who are already doing this work and having some success. A year ago, he passed Executive Order 59, which charged all state agencies to begin looking at their data, reviewing their policies, and through the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as a part of that charge, all state agencies have created diversity, equity, and inclusion plans to really examine and evaluate the work that's being done at the state agencies and participation so that all Wisconsinites can be a part of the state workforce. The state's workforce is the largest workforce across the state. And so he wants to ensure that state government works for all and is inclusive of all. And so this council is an extension of that Executive Order 59, in which we are tasked with providing insight, feedback, evaluation of the work that's currently taking place in state government, trying to develop a framework that promotes diversity, equity, and inclusion all across the state. And the reason why the council has been enacted with about 31 members is that we want to hear from those experts that are already doing this work in their communities. We believe working together, the nonprofits, for-profits, and state government all can lift the conversation around equity and inclusion, as well as look at best practices and structures that can be systemic.
All right. Well, let's drill down a little bit deeper. One definition of racism that's gaining currency is that it flows from a base of power to those with less power. Government has been a mechanism used in racism. We know that. Cities that redlining certain neighborhoods, for example. So as chair of the Governor's Advisory Committee on Council on Equity and Inclusion, what do you see as vestiges of institutional racism that the governor and the state government needs to deal with?
Well, I think as you talked about racism, you know, we think about the systemic nature of it. So as you, the example you provided about redlining, Dr. Odawa could talk about how American Indians have been treated. Maya could certainly talk about, the resettlements and just the welcoming or not welcoming of our partners from Laos and Cambodia and other countries where many of our Hmong people have joined the states. And so I think what has been in place is systematically keeping those without power, those immigrants, those who are new, or those who have been here but not recognized, out. And those systemic issues show themselves in policies, procedures, who has access to economics. And so what we're trying to do from a root cause standpoint is look at those statutes, those regulations, those policies that are in place that might be structured in a way that does not allow for equitable participation of all Wisconsinites. And so by asking members of the council to work with us, with state government, we believe we can have some systematic evaluation, analyzation, and best practices across the entire state.
We're talking with the three members of the new Equity and Inclusion Advisory Council appointed by Governor Evers. They are the chair of that group, Dawn Krim, who you just heard. She is the governor's, she's the chair of that group and the secretary designee of the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. Also with us today, Mai Zhang. She is president of the Hmong American Leadership and Economic Development Organization and a member of the Eau Claire City Council. And Odawa White. He is the dean of student affairs at the Lakutere Ojibwa College in Hayward. Robin Washington from Simply Superior is joining me to ask the questions. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Next question goes to Mai Zhang. The council is charged with reviewing and analyzing rules and policies relating to home ownership and business development, and economic development is a particular focus of yours. Where do you see obstacles that state government might be able to clear?
Yeah, so we've been having this conversation over the last few years of where some of those disparity lies, and some of those unintentional, maybe intentional barriers. So when we talk about state contracting, and for example, let's one of the biggest issue that we do have in like marginalized communities, or even just specifically drilling down to the Hmong community, is that we're a very monolingual community. A lot of our parents, the Hmong language only existed since the 1950 for the written language. So it's been a very much spoken language. Those who do know how to read and write in Hmong are more privileged a lot, and it's far fewer than those that just speak the language. And so when we're talking about getting access to lingual through the state, getting our parents being able to come in and have those conversations, and those, how we get interpreters, because I think we have translators who has to go through this vigorous certification process. I think these are the type of things where is the state making it more easy, accessible for folks to then have proper interpretation and provide more lingual access to communities that do need it. And so these are the things that we are looking at. In addition to, that's going to help with our contractors. We have a lot of young folks that are going to be able to do that. And that's also looking at that capability of being your own entrepreneur, setting your own time, being able to then also have the experience with contracting with the state. Contracting is also another problem that we are looking at, and it's not just a state problem, but it's a problem that even at the local level, I'm having conversations with our city, is our procurement process. Are we being equitable and intentional about who we bring on and who we are able to elevate and help get those contracts to minorities? Are we looking at minorities, or are we just lumping women business owned as minorities? And these are the things that we want to make sure that it's intentional, and we are creating opportunities for other folks, emerging entrepreneurs, emerging minority businesses, to be able to get that same opportunity to jump on. And that's a part of the state process, that these are the little things that we can make big impacts in small communities by giving these, opening up these opportunities for folks to be able to join us. And a matter of fact, is how do we help them build wealth and equity, right, as a state?
So while we're talking about building wealth and equity in business, economics, and then home ownership. Of course, education is another component of all this. Dr. White, that's your area of expertise. Where can state government improve access to education for BIPOC or minority populations?
Okay, well, first of all, I usually start this out before I speak, and that's just the acknowledgement of the lands that we all reside on right now. And historically, our Indigenous people that represent Wisconsin, our five Wisconsin bands, and then Dakota people and other federally recognized tribes, Ho-Chunk, Bode, Wadami, Menominee, Oneida, Stockbridge, Muncie. And so I just like to give that recognition that we reside on these lands that were historically represented by these tribes, and we still are present in the in Wisconsin. And so from an educational standpoint, I know that the governor had issued some money to be able to look at race-based mascots in education. And so that's been always a priority within the Wisconsin Indian Education, National Indian Education Association. And so all these associations that denounce the use of mascots and race-based names in schools and school districts across the state. And so that's always been a priority in education. And part of that, it has to do with the self-esteem and the self-image of Native students in education. And so that goes along the lines with that whole idea of gaining access and making sure that we are making sure that we're equitable across all lines. And so when we look at like the UW system, we want to make sure that that there's representation from all areas of students of color, minorities, Indigenous people, Black Indigenous people, students of color. So we want to make sure that those are equitable across all lines. And we're looking at hiring practices, looking at best practices, excellence and diversity and equity inclusion across the state. And so these are all important information. When we look at Act 31 across the state, that's another area too in education where school districts are required to teach history and in all grade levels, fourth through 12th grade. And so curriculum has to focus on teaching those grade levels, as well as when you're looking at licensing, pre-licensed teachers also have to gain that information about minority groups, relations, instruction and history, culture, tribal sovereignty, and most of all the federally recognized information regarding federally recognized American Indian tribes and bands in the state. And so I want to make sure that we continue this work, because we do have a lot of good work that's happened across all levels of education, but we want to make sure that we keep these conversations at the forefront and know that there's also this inequity in education that we need to move forward with.
Now, the summer's protests spurred by the death of George Floyd and the shooting of Jacob Blake were much about the way the branch of government that is law enforcement deals with Black members of the community. Dawn Krim, how much of a focus will policing be on the conversations of the council?
So I appreciate you mentioning George Floyd's name, because as you know, there was definitely an awareness and awakening of how Black men have been treated over the years, over the decades. And so what we know is that an evaluation certainly needs to take place around training and about different holds and the way sometimes the arrests are administered. And so this governor is supportive of education and banning those practices that may not be necessary for usage. And so when you think about this council won't be directly addressing those issues per se, but we'll be talking about policy procedures that are best practices that could be used by law enforcement or endorsed and supported by state governments all around the state. So again, I believe that lends itself to best practices, not necessarily around specifically law enforcement, but also criminal justice and what that reform looks like as well. And so top to bottom, really looking for input from our leaders that are on the council and thinking about, again, what policies we might impact.
That's the voice of Dawn Krim. She is the Secretary Designee for the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services, joining us today in her role as the Chair of the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion, which is the focus of our program at this time. Two other members of that council are with us as well. The Dean of Student Affairs at the Lacouture Ojibwa College in Hayward, Dr. Odawa White, and also the president of the Hmong American Leadership and Economic Development Organization and a member of the Eau Claire City Council, Mai Zhang. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll hear from Burl Middleton. He's co-chair of a new group called the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project. If you have a question, comment, or story to share relating to equity and inclusion, give us a call at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach with Robin Washington, and you're listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network.
I'm Robin Washington with Dean Kallenbach, and we're back with our conversation with three members of the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion: Odawa White of Hayward, Mai Zhang of Eau Claire, and the chair of the group, Department of Safety and Professional Services Secretary Designee Dawn Krim.
Now, for the past 40 years, many of the tensions between state and tribal governments, at least among Ojibwa tribal governments, and tribal members, has been linked to the court-upheld hunting, fishing, and gathering rights that the tribe retained under the 19th century treaties. A very recent example of treaty rights tension between the state and tribal governments manifested last week in the wolf hunt in Wisconsin that was hastily arranged after a group of called Hunter Nation successfully sued the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board to conduct a hunt this winter. The quota for non-tribal members was set at 119, but that total take rose to 216 before the hunt was called off. Dylan Jennings of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission accused the Department of Natural Resources of mismanagement and disrespect of tribal nations and their rights. Odawa White, what guidance can you provide, or do you plan to provide, to the governor as part of the council, Advisory Council on Equity and Diversion? What advice can you provide those members of the council when it comes to tribal relationships with state government?
Certainly, yeah. So it hasn't necessarily been the best relationship, as you can see just recently with Dylan Jennings and some of the information that he provided and some of the conflict that had occurred. And so I feel that, yeah, there is a relationship of turmoil based off of the treaty rights. And so some of what I could bring to this table is understanding the historical nature, the importance of these treaty rights, the rights to hunt, fish, and gather, as well as our relationship with animals, as well as the land that we reside on and the resources that we procure from each of the seasons. And so some of that understanding, that cultural understanding, is important to understand, along with the policies that were meant to pretty much strip Ojibwe people of some of the rights and responsibilities that we have within our own nation. And so that nation, so the state recognized that that back in 1980, three, that we had the right to hunt, fish, and gather, but tribes have been arrested early in the 1900s for doing, you know, for being, for shooting a deer off of reservation with outside of the ceded territory, which is I usually look at like every land north of the Chippewa River or Highway 29, and so that right wasn't actually recognized until 1983. So you're looking at probably a lot of years in between that. And so it's important to understand. So that's why we have legislation like Act 31 to be able to teach young people about the history, the sovereignty, and the culture of Ojibwe, as well as other tribes in the state of Wisconsin. So that's where it begins, is at a really early age. And so that's where I bring some of my expertise and understanding, being a tribal member of Lakota Ray, and then growing up on our Lakota Ray Ojibwe reservation, and actually spearfishing and hunting during some of the seasons. I can bring some of that perspective in understanding that state to tribal relationship is important for us all to be moving forward and progressing.
Mm-hmm. Secretary Krim, there's a study, and I can dig it up, but I have seen it, that showed that most Blacks or members of BIPOC groups who succeed in business are recruited by other people of color. First of all, has that been your experience? And secondly, how would this work in Wisconsin government and business, where there are very few BIPOC people who are in these hiring positions?
Well, thank you for bringing up that study. I think when you think about people of color and the movement into especially management positions and things of that nature, you have to have a understanding of the benefits of having all of these diverse voices at the table. People have to be invited to the table. And that study probably also talks about people often engage with people who are similar to them or look like them or have similar socioeconomic levels, if you will. And so we all mostly tend to know those who are mostly connected to our groups. So it would not surprise me that study mentions that from a business standpoint. I would say it's prevalent across industries. And so what's important about diversity, equity, and inclusion is to step outside of just the communities that you're a part of and see the talents and the value of all individuals and what they might bring to the table. Because if you look at the management structure now, in most corporations, the majority is white. And so if you have to simply rely on another person of color being at the table to bring someone in, change won't occur. And so we need the awakening and the understanding of the benefit of having those diverse voices at the table, and so that people are not only reliant on BIPOC individuals to bring other BIPOC individuals to the table. It's everyone's responsibility.
Hi, Zhang. Contrasting with, we heard Adawa White talk about the Native American, the need to teach the history of Native Americans in Wisconsin and the centuries that we're talking about there. And contrasting with that, Hmong Americans are among the newest ethnic group in our country, with most of the immigration happening in the past 50 years. What particular challenges does that present as you speak for the Hmong community on the Governor's Council?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. I think that's a really good question. We've been just having this conversation, and in respect of to what both my colleague has just said, it is a cultural shift that the state has to look at. It's a systemic shift that we have to look at, and a cultural shift. But also being able to understand, I think the biggest challenge that Southeast Asian, not just Hmong, but Southeast Asians and new immigrants from Asian American immigrants are facing is that America is polarizing a lot of the Asian Americans, and we're seeing a lot of the the disaggregated data not being correctly segregated to really reflecting the needs. I think there's this model minority that it's being pushed on us as far as all Asians being overserved or being overrepresented in the fact that we know we have different Asian Americans that has been in this country for many different generations, and that reflects their economic impact. There is does reflect differently. So that is one of the challenges that we do see, is that as Asian Americans, we get lumped into one group. And so some resources are limited to those that are of Southeast Asian or new immigrants not being able to access those resources. So this is something that I'd really encourage our government to really look into, is that cultural aspect of really being able to understand the needs of individuals and communities versus lumping them all together. And we see that in the African American communities too. Most recently, our Somali immigrants are here, and they then have different needs than our African American Black community. So that is, it's not just within the Asian American, but it is a culture shift. It is the way of thinking and being able to identify that secondary impact from our initial bias, right? Is that implicit, explicit bias that I think the government should be invested in.
Right. I think a lot of what we've been talking about so far is identifying the challenges or problems. Odawa White, what are you hoping to see as the outcome or the work of the council? What do you hope to see as an achievement?
Well, I hope to also just making sure that our 11 federally recognized tribes and one non-federally recognized tribe in the state of Wisconsin are represented across the board in an equitable fashion as far as representation on boards, representation and best practices, making sure that those relations between the state and the tribes are definitely positive and moving in the right direction. And a lot of work, like I said, a lot of work has been done. And so I hope not to speak on behalf of all Indigenous people, but to make sure that we're all that we are at the table and also affecting some of the policies that the state and governor is implementing for the future.
Mai Zhang, what will success look like for you as it relates to the Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion?
Thank you so much, Dean. Yes, I think developing long-term sustainability of this culture shift, the wonderful thing is that this is not something new. We have partnering as sister states that has been able to take these initiatives on a long-term commitment. And I'd really like to see our state commit to individual councils that are permanent councils for communities to being able to advise the government on. And so, and that it doesn't shift, our priorities does not shift with administration, that we continue to make this a long-term commitment.
And in doing so, your work is definitely cut out for you. Secretary Krim, has the council set a timeline as to when it will have recommendations ready for the governor and the executive branch of state government in Wisconsin?
Well, great question. Not just yet. As Dean shared at the top of the program, we've only had our first meeting. The appointments are first set for 2 years, and this first year is developing a sustainable infrastructure in order to do the work, the framework to do the work. And so we're rolling up our sleeves and getting at it pretty quickly, but we have yet to have that next conversation because we are simply at the formulation stage, and that will be coming, the next steps will be coming out pretty soon.
All right. Mai Zhang, Odawa White, and Dawn Krim are among the 30 members of the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion, which was formed last month. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that was the voice of my colleague, Robin Washington. He's host of Simply Superior, which airs each Friday morning on the Ideas Network stations in Superior and Ashland. To hear his programs, if you're not in that region, simply go to WPR.org, click on Shows, and then click on Simply Superior. He's got some great stuff there. Hey, Robin, thanks for helping lead the conversation today.
Thank you, Dean.
So up next, we learn about the new group called the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project with one of its co-chairs, Burl Middleton of Eau Claire. Your calls and emails still welcome at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or ideas at WPR.org. That's ideas at WPR.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on the West Side. We spent the past half hour or so talking with members of the governor's new advisory council on equity and inclusion. That's not the only new group to be announced last month, though. The Chippewa Valley Transformation Project held a media event 2 weeks ago to share its goals as an anti-racism initiative. Joining us to talk about it is Burl Middleton, one of the group's four co-chairs. He's currently vice president of the local nonprofit Uniting Bridges. He's a former member of the Eau Claire City Council, and his day job is a program director at the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. Burl Middleton, welcome to the West Side.
Well, thank you, Dean. Can you hear me?
Hear you loud and clear. So the group is called Chippewa Valley Transformation Project. What is it that the project is trying to transform?
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, let me just say that I want everyone just to acknowledge that this is Women's History Month. And of course, without them, you wouldn't be here. So I just wanted to make that that real clear. With regards to the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project, it is just an organization that was the brainchild of former city manager Dale Peters to actually take a look at what possibilities are there for collaboration with a variety of organizations under one umbrella, one singular thought in terms of eradicating racism and diversifying our community, as well as including people who have been marginalized over the past number of years. And as a result of that, this is the organization. So the work of the organization itself is that it is, we know that there's a lot of information that's out there. There's a lot of work that's already being done in the community to address the community's equity, diversity, and inclusion efforts. And what our organization, Chippewa Valley Transformation Project, is intended to do is to complement those existing efforts.
Now, the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project, in its news release announcing its formation, defines itself as an anti-racism initiative. And that phrase anti-racist is one that we've been hearing a lot in the past several months. When it comes to your group, what does it mean?
Well, of course, the sensationalism that takes place in our country is usually things that you see in the media. But there are a microcosm of those same types of things that take place that are not in the national spotlight. And those things take place right within our community. As our community becomes more diversified, the issues of contention becomes more heightened. And so with regards to race, because again, race is one of the easiest things to see in terms of a disposition that one person may have against another person, that is one of the focuses that we have. But we also have inclusiveness. So we don't want to let people believe that it's only about race. It is about inclusiveness. And there's a variety of other groups that need to be included. I heard one of your speakers earlier talk about Somalians. And of course, that is a specific ethnic group. We have Hispanics within our community. We have people who are of Muslim faith, a variety of those situations that could be problematic within our community that this organization wants to address.
We're speaking with Burl Middleton. He's co-chair of the new organization, the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project. Earlier in this hour, we did hear from members of the Governor's Advisory Council on Equity and Inclusion, which is charged with finding ways government can better encourage diversity and access, specifically state government. How much of the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project's focus is governmental reform?
Well, obviously we have some of our partners within the governmental aspects. We definitely want to take place from a legislative standpoint that we can enact certain types of policies, procedures, and if necessary, laws that will help to enforce and to enact some of the proposals that we will eventually come up with. So their role is crucial. Although at this point, in this juncture, this is a community-based organization. And so the input primarily is from the community, not from the government. I think most of us are pretty much aware and pretty much concerned with some of the governmental legislative rules and laws that we have pertaining to racism and bigotry, discrimination, and unfair treatment. But we also have a lot of other issues that we have to address, Dean. There's a lot of toxicity that takes place within a community as well that may not necessarily be related to racism. So we do have to differentiate those things and separate those things out so that we make sure that we're the right cure is for the right disease.
Mm-hmm. We've done a number of shows and stories in the past 18 months about racial tensions at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, for instance. Will the university be within the scope of the work of the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project?
Yes. In fact, Dean, if I could just give you and your listeners a little brief history in terms of what has taken place and why this is so essential. When I first came to Eau Claire, that was in 1987. In 1987, I was asked to be a panel on a group that was at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire to address issues regarding the LGBTQ community, because there was something called gay bashing that was taking place. In addition to that, minority students, particularly minority students, were one and done. In other words, they would come to the university for one semester, racial tensions within the campus or somewhere within the community would essentially cause them to not return to the university. So they were basically one and done. So that was an issue that became a great concern. In 1994, the then city council president, Mark Lewis, and the then Eau Claire chancellor, Larry Snack, determined that they were going to enact some resolutions within the city council. So when you asked about the governmental, activities, that is one of those areas where the government has actually tried to do something. Mm-hmm. But of course, those things tend to die down. In 1995, we had a community committee on diversity. In 1997, 1998, we developed Circles of Change with then city manager Mike Huggins. In 2000, the city council had a 26-member task force on racial justice that came together. Of that report, there were 11 members who were to look at various aspects with regards to the report that the task force had determined. In 2001, the written report was given. And of course, in September, then city manager Dale Peters developed a draft of the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project. And in 2021, we have now started to enact some of those aspects of the actual project itself. And so we're actually starting to get up and roll with those things. So there's been a long drawn out history. Now, that's just what I know from 1987 when I came to town. What was taking place prior to that?
Is that discouraging to you that there have been all these different attempts and I mean, do you feel like there has been progress made? But obviously, because of the project and your involvement with it, more progress has to be made. Is it frustrating that, you know, having been here since 87, have you, you know, that maybe you haven't seen the progress that in these issues that you would hope?
Well, Dean, I think it's actually somewhat bittersweet, because on the one hand, that means that the community continues to address the issue. They have been up in the forefront of addressing these issues. On the other hand, do we make much progress? Well, there has been the autonomy of various groups. And of course, this is the first time that these entities, all of which have been successful within their own rights in some form or another, have come together for a singular goal. So that is very, very encouraging. And these organizations, Dean, by the way, have had varying degrees of success over the issues of racism, diversity, and inclusion. So again, what we are attempting to do with the Transformation Project is simply to bring all of these entities together with all of the resources that they have and take away some of that autonomy, but not take away their ability to or usurp their ability to enact what they feel is a specific area that they need to concentrate on. So again, it's somewhat bittersweet in that, yes, it's been frustrating over a number of years, but on the other hand, we continue to work on it.
Census data tells us that the Eau Claire metropolitan area is 91% white, with no other demographic group making up more than 3% of the population. It's one of the least diverse metro areas in the country. How does that demographic makeup impact the work you're trying to do here?
Well, it won't. And I say that simply from the standpoint that when I was elected to the Eau Claire City Council, I think a lot of people were under the impression that, well, what are my chances because of those demographics that you just mentioned, the statistic that you just mentioned? I think at that time in 2000, we were less than 0.5% African-Americans in this community, according to the Census Bureau. But the people who voted for me obviously voted because of the issue. So I don't think that the number of people to get the job done of a specific group is going to be discouraging, because I think that it's the issue in and of itself. And that's the issue of racism, non-inclusiveness, the lack of diversity, and those types of things. So I think that our community is coming together much more than it has in the past to address those issues.
You're vice president of the Uniting Bridges of the Chippewa Valley, which is actually the umbrella under which the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project has been formed. How is the work of the project different or complementary to what Uniting Bridges seeks to do in the community?
The Uniting Bridges is basically the offshoot of what happened in 2000 as a result of the task force on racial justice that the city council had before them. We decided that what we would do as a small group, we were the Juneteenth committee at that time, and we decided that what we could possibly do to embrace the community, to have the community be more aware and exposed to its underrepresented members in the community, was to have some type of festivity. And Juneteenth is one of those types of festivities. It represents freedom, it represents achievement, but it also represents a historic mark in that from the past in 1865, we decided that there would not be the Emancipation Proclamation to its fullest. It wasn't until 1867. Mm-hmm. So we now know that because of the operations of the Juneteenth Committee, that we could do more in the community. And so that was the offshoot. And so we did. And I believe that we will continue on to do things of that nature.
In 10 seconds that we have left, what's next for the Chippewa Valley Transformation Project? It was announced 2 weeks ago. Are you looking for members?
We are going to be having some community feedback. That will be the responsibility of the advisory committee as well as the coordinating committees. As the Transformation Project has come together, there are various segments and sectors that will be contributing various types of aspects that the community will be engaged in. And so, yes, that will be one of the things that will be coming at some point in time.
Burl Middleton, thank you for joining us today. Burl Middleton is co-chair of the new anti-racism group Chippewa Valley Transformation Project. Earlier today, we were joined by members of the governor's new advisory council on equity and inclusion. Producer today is Catherine Thomas. Kate Spranger manages the archives, and Tommy McGowan is our publicist. Next week, it's a legislative update with State Representatives Rob Summerfield, a Republican from Bloomer, and Jody Emerson, the Democrat from Eau Claire. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This has been The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.